back into the program, CBSSports.com, Eye on College Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Norlander. This is a Wednesday edition, so Gary Parrish and Jeff Goodman, of course, are back with me, per usual. And if you haven't subscribed, I'm going to remind you again, please go into iTunes and feel free to subscribe to the podcast. It's free, and the numbers grow every week. So thank you to those who have, and if you haven't yet, by all means, get on board. The conference season is right around the corner, and the podcasts are only going to get better. So, day after Christmas, it's been a couple of light past couple of days, but plenty of good games ahead. And, in fact, Christmas saw a good one. We'll get to that in just a second. But how you fellas doing? How was your Christmas? Jeff Goodman, the Jewish man on the podcast, and Gary Parrish, the man with five Christmas trees in his home. Guys, how you doing?
Well, good. What's going on with you, Matt Norlander?
I'm back home after a trip to the fiance's and the family's place. Went well, and things are good. You guys have a healthy one?
Everything's perfect, except here's the deal. Santa Claus, you've heard of Santa Claus, right?
I have.
Santa Claus delivered my son a four-wheeler, right?
Right.
He wanted a four-wheeler because he's growing up in North Mississippi, and now he's starting to become a little Mississippi-ish. So, like, he wanted a four-wheeler.
Like a real one? Like a little...
Oh, no, a fake four-wheeler.
Kid.
What do you mean?
No, like, I don't... Like, he's nine, isn't he?
He's 9 years old, yes. So what, is nine too young to have a four-wheeler?
It might be too old. I don't know. Are we talking like Fisher Price here?
No, it's a goddamn four-wheeler. What are you talking about?
Like a straight-up ATV?
Is going to buy his nine-year-old a real four-wheeler.
An ATV?
Yes, an ATV. Is that ridiculous?
Yeah.
Yes. It is. Ridiculous. You should lose your parenting privileges.
Well, it wasn't him. I think it was Santa, right?
Yeah. Don't try to lump me in with Santa Claus's mistakes. But here's the point. First off, I think you're wrong. I think a nine-year-old can have a four-wheeler suitable for a nine-year-old, right?
I think it's too young. But, you know, I don't know how you guys roll in Mississippi, so.
Oh, God. Like, listen.
did he get a cell phone in kindergarten, too?
He does not have a cell phone, but he wants one. He doesn't have one, but he wants one. No, the kid's
spoiled. What happens if he gets into an accident on his four?
Let me try to make sense of this. Let's try to figure out exactly what you're arguing here. Are you arguing that a nine-year-old shouldn't have an ATV, or are you arguing that that he just shouldn't have all the stuff he has?
I'm arguing that you shouldn't be a parent.
That's reasonable.
No,
that's a reasonable point.
I'm arguing that, yeah, a nine-year-old having a four-wheeler is probably a little bit young.
Okay. Well, hey, it's too late now. Here's the point. Santa delivered the four-wheeler with a dead battery.
Okay.
So like, you ever, like, try explaining that one, right? And then guess what? On Christmas Day, it's not like you can go out and get a new battery. So, like, when Santa sort of – he put me in a bad spot when the biggest present you give your kid is not workable on the day of the present giving. So, like, everything was just got off to a bad start. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Everything.
Did you blame it on Santa, or did you blame it on Kelly?
It's Santa Claus's fault. This is very clearly Santa Claus's fault.
How did he take it, though? I mean, in stride or you know, close to meltdown, I got this thing, I can't use it on the day I want to use it more than any other day.
He actually took it better than I thought, because he got some new, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, like a PS Vita. Do you know what a PS Vita is?
No idea.
It's like a hand, okay, like, remember when we were growing up, we had like Game Boys?
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is like the baddest Game Boy ever.
Okay. It's like a PlayStation in your hand, but the newest, best version.
That's exactly what it is. So he was, as long as he had that, he was cool with the four-wheeler not being up and running yet. So we'll get it all straight. Don't worry about it.
But I saw you tweeted, before I checked out on Christmas Eve, I did check in on Twitter real quick just to make sure, like, you know, no coach got fired or anything. And I saw you did tweet a picture of some sort of sleeping drug you gave your kid because you were fearing he'd wake up at 4:30 and want to do presents. So how did Christmas morning go for you? I mean, did you make it to at least 8:30 a.m.?
Oh, God, no. And just for the record, I did not drug my kid. I was just clowning.
I know. But
I drug myself, but I did not drug him. No, he got up at 5 a.m. We were up at 5 a.m., and then he was actually pretty good. Like, this is very unlike him. he got up at 5, but, you know, we have an exchange student, too, a 16-year-old from Italy who lives with us. And my son said, you know, he saw the four-wheeler, and then we were like, okay, do you want to open the other presents and stuff? And he said, no, I want to wait till Sylvia wakes up. I don't want to open them without her. So we like, he went back to sleep and slept till, like, 8. And then when she got up, he got up, and then we opened all the presents. And so the idea that he was willing to put those things off for somebody else, I thought was, again, unlike him, or unlike me at the very least.
Goodman, you did Chinese in the movie, right? I mean, you did the traditional Jewish Christmas, right?
There aren't many options. Yeah. You know, I had to do a radio show from noon to 3, a mix of Jewish guests and non-Jewish guests. I really give a lot of credit to John Gross, jumped on. Eric Murphy jumped on, Jamie Dixon, three guys that probably had a lot more, you know, important things to do than jump on.
I mean, well done. Stadium. Well done. I can't believe you got non-Jewish guys to take time out of there.
I felt horrible.
I can't believe.
I said, you know, Eric Murphy, I've known for a long time. I know he was just kind of hanging out with his family. I figured for 10 minutes, no problem. But I felt bad asking even Jamie Dixon and John Gross. I'd asked Jamie for the day before for Christmas Eve day. And so finished that up, went to Chinese food, new spot about 10 minutes away from my new house. Great spot. And then we saw Parental Guidance with Billy Crystal.
Oh, boy, I'm sorry. Did you actually enjoy it?
It was perfect for what we needed. Again, you know, the hard part is when you got a 9-year-old.
Yeah, Zero Dark 30 isn't exactly in the mix, yeah.
You got to find a movie that you kind of like and that your kid likes, and it's just not that easy.
I get you, man. Well, hey, you made the most of it. When you go Chinese, what's your go-to? You know, do you like to mix it up consistently, or do you have a fallback there?
Gotta have hot and sour soup. The place has gotta have good hot and sour soup, and then any spicy chicken dish or something like that, I'm good with.
I hear you. All right, good deal. I ended up doing Christmas Eve at the parents' place, but they don't have any bedrooms left because I'm the oldest of 4, so the fiance and I had to brick an air mattress and sleep there in the living room, you know, with the dog. So I got 2 black labs, and my neck is paying for it still. But
how was the big football game?
It was basketball. The Thanksgiving one was basketball. We actually, and then one of the bros, well, we live like half a mile from a high school, and my youngest brother is the freshman coach there, so he has access to the gym. So just, you know, I got to my parents' place on Christmas Eve in the afternoon. We had an hour to kill, so we went and played some ball. They're both, my two younger brothers are pretty good players. They still play in, like, competitive rec leagues that, no joke, Nate Robinson, like, drops in on twice a year and is like, hey, by the way, I'm here, I'm playing ball. So they're both pretty good, so we just got some hoops in. It went well, but overall it was, it was a good little Christmas. Couldn't complain. Surprised my parents with a television that my fiance almost gave it away before they even opened. I was like, "What are you doing?" You know. But it was a good time. So no complaints. But anyway, let's get to some hoops here. We actually had a pretty good Christmas gift there late, you know, Tuesday night out in Hawaii. The Diamond Head Championship game had Arizona and San Diego State. And if you saw it, you know what we're talking about. If you were, you know, traveling back home, or if you were passed out from too many cookies or any sort of food or present coma, you missed it. It was awesome. Nick Johnson had a game saving block that otherwise would have gave the game to San Diego State. And so Arizona will maintain that that high ranking. San Diego State should not drop out of the top 25. They're you know, in the 17-18 range, depending on what poll you saw. But Goodman, you know, Arizona alum, so I'll go to you first. Pretty impressive by San Diego State, right? I know you're not still totally sold on Arizona, but did this at least give you a little more evidence as to how good they can be? Because SDSU is no slouch.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I was there for that win against Florida, and it was fairly unimpressive for 36 minutes. This one, again, wasn't a work of art in terms of from an execution standpoint offensively. But what they did was they beat a top 20 team on a neutral court. They grinded it out again. And, again, Mark Lyons, while he didn't play great, brings that toughness to the table. And they have a bunch of other really good players. And, you know, I wrote a column that will go up later today. The fact of the matter is this Arizona team is nowhere near where they could be in 2 months. Their freshman big guys are still inconsistent. Lyons is still kind of, you know, a hit or miss guy. But I think it showed Nick Johnson is their best player. He's their best overall player. He's an athletic freak who just closed on Chase Tapley like a few I've ever seen before in terms of giving up a few, you know, few steps.
Looked automatic.
With that game block. It was unbelievable.
It looked automatic. Before we go to Gary, you say Nick Johnson's best player. That's, I mean, to me that is surprising as hell because Arizona's got loads of talent. Can I ask you just to qualify a little bit more why he is, I mean, you know, you see all the top recruits they have, the big men that they have that surely need the help. Lyons is, he can be a really big, powerful player in big moments when he wants to. What makes Nick Johnson the best all-around player for that team?
Well, I just think he does everything. He guards. He can shoot when they don't have a lot of great shooters. And he didn't shoot well last night. I mean, he was, I think, 1 of 6 from three. They're not a great three-point shooting team, and they can't rely on that. But he's so athletic, can get to the basket, can guard, knows his role. He can play some point. To be honest, he's probably their best point guard, better than Mark Lyons. And the two of them work fine together. They're not great. And that's my biggest worry with this team is, again, they don't get a lot of easy baskets because they don't have a natural point guard who just makes others better. I mean, listen, they've struggled against the zone every time they played against it this year. And San Diego State's not the type of team that plays that's effective in the zone, but they'll go up against some this year. Even UCLA, to be honest, could be effective against Arizona in the zone, even though they're not a very good defensive team. That's going to be the key for Arizona going forward is how much better they get, but their ceiling is extremely, extremely high.
All right, Gary, floor is yours in reaction to that game, whether you want to, you know, jump off what he said with Zona or San Diego State. Good showcase for the West Coast in general.
Yeah, I mean, it was the only game on, and so I don't know. I don't want to sit here and say the nation was watching it because I don't believe that that's true, and I don't, you know, the nation was actually watching the Clippers probably. But I think college basketball fans were watching it, and I think if you're an Arizona fan or a San Diego State fan, you come away feeling pretty good about your trip to Hawaii. Arizona, because, you know, they won the event. But San Diego State, because, listen, you know, I think Doug Gottlieb, our colleague, tweeted last night, he walks away from this event more certain that San Diego State is a legit top 20-ish team than maybe a week ago. And I think that's true as well. I mean, they performed, and you know, when you've got Tapley and Franklin, I mean, you've got two really, really good pieces, not necessarily heralded pieces, you know, from the recruiting ranks, but guys who have developed into really nice college basketball players. With Arizona, listen, I don't know if they're the third best team in the country, but, you know, for them to be sitting here undefeated at this point suggests that some of the intangibles are in place. You're down 6 in the final minute against Florida, figure out a way to win. Florida had something to do with it, obviously, but still, you figure out a way to win that game. You're down last night. I think Mark Lyons actually got his fourth foul with like 14 minutes to play. You know, just fold it up and go home then, right? Except, you know, they figured it out. They figured out a way to win, made plays when they needed to make plays. And you know, we're not saying anything that hasn't been said before, but Sean's doing a terrific job with this team. To be undefeated at this point is impressive. And to Jeff's larger point, you know, they still got a lot of pieces that can develop into you know, bigger parts of what they're doing. And very clearly, they're the Pac-12 favorite and somebody you could conceivably see in a Final Four.
As we turn to 2013, you know, Goodman mentioned and Gary mentioned how Arizona's still got time to you know, really form and get better. That's true of a lot of teams. Goodman, it's something that you've written about and mentioned about in a few columns this year. But I want to flip it on you and say, okay, what teams right now that are top 25 caliber, either in it or just on the fringe, do you believe are what they are? They're not going to get much better. They might continue to win in the style they've won, but we shouldn't expect them to be, like, for instance, you've said Missouri, judge them come February. That's a team you've really harped on. Well, what about a team that you judge them right now, December 26th, and you expect them, give me two or three that you expect to be pretty much the same on Valentine's Day heading into conference tournaments?
I mean, I think you look at the back half, you look at a Notre Dame for sure. They are what they are. You know, they're a bunch of veterans. What you see is what you get. Their backcourt is really good, really talented, athletic. You know, the front court with Cooley and Scott Martin, two of the older players around the country, big guys. I think they are what they are for the most part. I think Georgetown is what they are, even though they're younger. Because of their system, I think, again, I'm trying to think of other teams up top of my head here.
What about Cincinnati?
I don't know. I'll let you know after I see them. I'm going to see them tomorrow night against New Mexico. And I'm just kind of reserving judgment on Cincinnati until I see them in person, to be honest.
Okay. What about – I'm going to give you another one here. North Carolina State.
I mean, listen, they could come a long way. I mean, again, you're throwing in three freshmen that are all getting time, Rodney Purvis, T.J. Warren specifically, and even Tyler Lewis is your backup point guard. They have a lot of room to grow. It's unfair that we do judge a lot of these teams in November and December based on one or two games because, frankly, most of them don't play more than three or four relevant games,
right,
barometer games, in November and December. And we put probably a little too much stock in those going into league play.
Yeah, I think that's natural, a natural tendency and urge when you're, you know, for us when we're writing about it, reacting to it, you have Twitter. I think we do a relatively good job overall. I don't know. Gary, what about you? What about a team, you know, let's just look back here as we turn the calendar. You know, the next time we talk, it will be 2013. You know, a team that you see been decent so far, but you expect to come on late. We have this every year. We'll have two or three or four teams that surprise in conference play. So a team with two or three losses, maybe even four losses, you know, I Wisconsin's a team with four losses who I have doubts about this year, but is there anyone particular that stands out to you, Gary, that we could or should expect more from going ahead?
Well, the obvious one's Kentucky. I mean,
right. Who you said is under the radar, and you're actually right. It's crazy that that's even the point.
Yeah, I mean, they're three losses. They're unranked in the AP poll, but, you know, if you were – you know, I haven't checked odds to win national championship, but I assure you they're in the top 10 out in Vegas. I mean, because they have three lottery picks, and when you have three lottery picks, you tend to overwhelm people for the most part. And Ryan Harrow's getting better. I don't know what he'll be exactly, but, you know, they're in a better spot today than they were a month ago, considering we didn't even know what, you know, if he's going to be a part of the team. I mean, so... I mean, that's the obvious team with upside is that, you know, when you've got three lottery picks and you're unranked in December, yeah, give me – nobody will progress more from where they're at today in the rankings till late February than Kentucky probably. In terms of teams that are about what they are, I think any team with veterans who don't project as pros, those are the ones that usually – they just sort of settle into a certain spot in the rankings, you know, whether it's, you know, anywhere from 20 to 35. They're going to make the tournament. They have a chance to beat somebody. But they're probably not going to go, you know, to an Elite Eight or something like that. The one that I'm looking at the AP poll now, you know, Kansas State. You know, they're 9-2, and Bruce has done a really nice job to get them to 9-2, featuring a win over, you know, Florida on – it's technically a neutral court, even though it was in Kansas.
One game. Wait. Didn't one game, though, for the most part, let's be honest with this Kansas State team, one game probably got them in the top 25. Am I wrong?
Well, yes, technically, because the one win. But I also think people always talk about, you know, why, hey, you know, this team's only got one good win. Well, in December, you know, even in late December, unfortunately, with the way we schedule – or the way college basketball schedules, that's going to be the case. But there's something to be said for teams who don't take bad losses. You know?
Agreed.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, they took care of Lamar and North Florida and Texas Southern and USC Upstate and North Dakota and Alabama Huntsville too, Gary. They took care of them.
Listen, I think you're missing the larger point, which is not uncommon for you. You know, teams slip up and lose games all the time that they're not supposed to lose. And I think there's something – it is an accomplishment on some level if you're able to not do that. If you're able to not slip up and lose a game that on paper you're supposed to win. I don't think you can base anything alone on that. But when you get to late December and you've played, say, 11 games and you've lost to no bad teams and you actually have beaten at least one of the good teams you played, that in and of itself is some sort of accomplishment.
All right. I want to look ahead. Slow week. I mean, as we record this, you know, no games on Wednesday. Thursday is very low for TV. Friday brings more, and the weekend brings more. Interesting one for me, Gary. Baylor at Gonzaga, just because I want to see. Like, I'm pretty confident that Gonzaga is a top 15 team. We can get into their tournament stuff come tournament time. But I want to actually see how Baylor responds, you know, playing at Gonzaga, how that's going to be. Give me a quip on that game and what you're hoping to see.
My guess is Gonzaga wins the game just because they tend to win, you know, when they play at home. This earlier this year to Illinois being an obvious exception. But on the other hand, you know, Baylor's got real players. I mean, they're talented, and though they can mess
up. I love that. They got real players again.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying.
He's just ripping you. Go ahead, Gary.
I know, but you know what? Like, he always has his jokes, but he's never funny. Why is he never funny with his jokes?
No, I'm just making it clear that everybody knows Baylor has real players.
They have talented players. Should I use another word? What word would be suitable for you?
Talented.
Talented?
Much better. Much better. Thank you. Have we muted Paris?
He doesn't realize that his sound is actually totally dropped out right now.
Awesome.
Go ahead, Gary. Can we hear you? You are barely there, Gary.
Please be. We should have a mute button for Paris.
This is great. You were actually. I can barely hear you. Are you covering up your mic?
Why would I cover up my mic?
There you are. Go ahead. We can hear you better now. You had faded into the background as if someone was trying to suffocate you with a pillow.
Oh, well, here's what I do sometimes. When Goodman's talking, I hit mute. Okay. And maybe that might mess up my mic a little bit.
There you go. All right, go ahead on Baylor.
What are we talking about? Okay, so Baylor has talented individual players. And when you have talented individual players, the same reason that people think Kentucky might be really good as the season progresses, you know, it would apply to Baylor as well in any particular game. And so you combine that with the idea that they've already gone into Rupp Arena and won. It's not inconceivable that they should be that they could go to Gonzaga and walk out of there with a victory. But if you're asking for a prediction, I would take Gonzaga by 5 to 10 points at home.
Another good Friday game is Missouri at UCLA. Goodman, should UCLA win this game? What are you expecting? What should we expect from UCLA playing at home to a Missouri team that, you know, we've seen them plenty of times this year, a good team, maybe not as good as it would have been with Michael Dixon, who's gone, but the Bruins themselves have had their issues, and they're still trying to straighten themselves out here.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for UCLA. I still think the light's going to go on a little bit. They're not going to be the team that we maybe thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year because, again, they're just a mess defensively. They have the ball in Larry Drew's hands a little bit too much for my liking. I'd have far more run through Kyle Anderson. However, I think they can beat Missouri. I really do. And again, Missouri's a very good team, but I think they've got a long way to go. Gary just saw them beat Illinois, and Phil Pressey's got to shoot better. He's got to be able to defend a little bit better. But I think this is a team that's still kind of finding itself with all those transfers with Keon Bell and Ernest Ross and even Alex Oriaki, who really played well in that game, played like a man. He's going to need to do that again. If Missouri plays tough, and that's what they are a bunch of tough kids. If they play tough and punch UCLA, I'm not sure UCLA punches back, but I think in the first 5 minutes, we'll be able to tell whether UCLA can hang with Missouri and beat them.
I don't know how UCLA is going to keep Missouri off boards. I mean,
you're right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, even with Pressey the other day, and I was sort of joking about, like, he missed the first 15 shots, and I was giving it to Goodman a little bit because Goodman's in love with Phil Pressey. But in reality, he would get into the lane and just throw it at the rim, knowing his guys are going to go get it. Like, he could draw their post defenders and then just throw it at the rim. And in Bowers or Oriaki, somebody's going to get it and put it back in. So some of that, though, listen, you know, you should never miss 15 straight shots in a basketball game. But some of it was actually by design, and it speaks to how good that team is on the offensive end. Goodman mentioned Larry Drew. Let me ask you this. Nobody's had more fun clowning Larry Drew than me over the years because he was a mess at Carolina. They immediately got much better the second he left, and then he had this ridiculous rap video where what happened? It was like the whole – so listen, I love clowning the kid as much as anybody. But what – are we sure he's not – are we – like it seems like sometimes people are still clowning him without actually looking – like he's having a pretty good year.
Well, if you look at the numbers, the assist to turnover ratio is pretty good. But if you watch him still, he's okay. But guys are making shots around him. They're a good offensive team. I mean, they are. If you watch Larry Drew, he's still not a point guard on a team that you consider to be a top 10 team.
Well, there's only 10 of those then, Jeff.
Well, and UCLA is not one of them. And I think a big reason is because they don't have – right now – To be honest, I think Kyle Anderson would be much better because I just think he makes life easier. Playing those two guys together, I just don't think it works. I don't. I don't think Kyle Anderson has a great role on that team as a power forward.
I guess my point is that sometimes I think we have an opinion on somebody as an individual, and I include myself in this, on somebody as a player, and even though they change, they can change – our opinions are much slower to change. I think Kenny Boynton was a little bit like this last year. You know, like through his first 2 years in Florida, he was just shooting everything and missing everything. And so he got this reputation as just somebody who shoots everything and misses everything. And then we continued to sort of label him that way throughout last year when in reality the numbers suggested he's a pretty good shooter. You know, and he was not – he was much more efficient last year than he was – as a freshman and sophomore year. Now, you get into him trying to dribble the ball and play point guard, that's a whole other issue. But I think the reputation that Kenny Boynton got as a freshman or sophomore, that isn't actually the player he is anymore. And I wonder if that's true with Larry Drew at all.
I don't know. I mean, he's looked better. Some of his numbers are good. Some of them aren't. But, I mean, he's solid. I agree with Goodman. I'd rather have Anderson with the ball, although Gottlieb has said that he isn't a huge Anderson fan because he lacks athleticism. But
Kendall Marshall, and that's why he didn't like him. But right. He was pretty good with the ball in his hands in college.
Right,
he was a pretty darn good college.
Right, exactly. That's and we're dealing with, of course, with college. Just if you're listening to the podcast and we're talking about these games, I want to give you an idea. The Baylor Gonzaga one is Friday at 8, and the Missouri UCLA one is at 10. Both are on ESPN2. Saturday, a couple good ones. Vegas at Carolina is at 2 o'clock on Saturday. I want to hit on that real quick. If people remember correctly, last year Vegas beat UNC. It was the first kind of big upset of that season. It came before. It came before the Xavier Cincy fight. It came before Christian Rothford beating Kentucky. Hey, this one's, to me, I think I'm more interested and intrigued by this one than any game this weekend, only because I'm starting to doubt Carolina as an upper echelon. Forget elite. They're not elite. An upper echelon team. Go and beat Vegas when you're playing at home and they don't have Mike Mosier. Goodman, what do you think?
Well, I mean, that loss to Texas was the one that I think shocked everybody. I mean, again, you know, you lose to Butler early on in the year, fine. You're still trying to find yourself a little bit. Indiana, you get blown out. Okay, you know what? They may be the number one team in the country. But when you lose to a Texas team that right now is really struggling and without their point guard, Mike Cabongo, you start to wonder what's going on here and if they're not just a middle-of-the-road ACC team at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And this UNLV game is going to be a big one for a couple of reasons. One, they go into league play with some pretty tough games after this. They play at Virginia, Miami at home, at Florida State, Maryland at home. So this five-game stretch could define not only whether they're a top 25 team, but maybe whether they're an NCAA tournament team. What if they go 1-4 over the stretch, which could happen, by the way? I don't think it will.
Yeah, it could.
You know, I like James Michael McAdoo. I know you kind of hammered him a little bit, Matt, last week for not playing big games. I just don't think he's got enough help right now. I don't think Marcus Paige is ready as a freshman point guard. I think he needed to sit a year, get physically stronger, and play behind Kendall Marshall this year. That didn't work. I think they have a lot of wings that really haven't developed. You know, Reggie Bullock's having an okay year. He needs to have a great year. They don't have a five man at all. You know, Joel James is not ready. Desmond Hubert's not good enough. So there are a lot of holes with this team, and I think too much has been put on James Michael McAdoo.
They lost four pros. Three of them left early, and they weren't – their roster wasn't – and I'm saying this in hindsight because in the preseason I just assumed, you know, it's Carolina, they'll be fine. But in reality, you look at that roster now, they're not good enough from a player's perspective. And Roy Williams has made a career out of getting great players and then turning them into great teams. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer for a reason. But rarely has he, A, had to win with a lesser roster, and B, has he ever done it? And I think this is a challenge for him that that clearly, you know, at this point isn't going too well. I still think they'll be fine in the ACC, I mean, you know, and make the NCAA tournament just based on, I don't know how great the ACC is. But, you know, you look at that roster, how when you think of a what you would consider a good North Carolina roster, how many guys on it, you know, would fit on some of these other teams? McAdoo, probably. That might be it. You know, that might be it. I mean, you know,
I think Marcus Paige. Marcus Paige will be pretty good.
I think he. Like, when you watch him, the talent is very clearly there. He's going to be a Carolina level point guard, but he's not that right now. And McAdoo. I think McAdoo's fine if you put him in a different role. I just think he's being asked to do things that he can't do right now, which is, you know, almost like, you know, they want him to carry the scoring, almost like it, like what Kansas asked Thomas Robinson to do as a junior. They're asking McAdoo to do as a sophomore.
But Thomas Robinson had
Withy and Withy.
Yeah,
defensively to help him. That's right.
I guess this is what we could all agree on. McAdoo's not equipped to do what they're asking him to do right now.
Yes.
And it's not like they're doing it because they think it's best. It's or the way to win.
A choice.
They have no choice. They don't have, again, the roster, you look at that, and I guess we could have noticed this in the preseason. I think some people probably did. I just assume that these are Carolina recruits. These are Carolina guys. They'll be fine. But, you know, you know, as we get ready to go into January, that roster it's an unimpressive roster by North Carolina standards.
Another really big one on Saturday that we're going to have to bypass on the podcast is the Goodman Special, Holy Cross at Boston College.
Is that true?
I know you're excited about that one, but we'll have to wait to analyze that on next week's. A decent mid-major one is Valpo at Murray State, but Kentucky-Louisville on CBS 4 o'clock is the big kahuna. And Parrish had mentioned how UNC had lost so many pros and look where they are. Well, obviously Kentucky's in the same boat, a little bit better, but also struggling. This game is at Louisville. You know, Cardinals fans are dying of hunger and thirst to really lay the smackdown on UK and Calipari specifically. Gary, you have any sort of notions and expectations about this one, or since it's Kentucky Louisville and an enigmatic Kentucky team and a Louisville team that won't have Gorgui Dieng, is it hard to really get a grasp on this and you just kind of, you know, go in blind and hope for the best / worst and just, you know, I say that to mean anything can happen. Let's just not have a fight like we almost did with Cousins a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I first off, I'm not convinced Gorgui won't play.
No? A little gamesmanship?
You never know with Rick. Never. Yeah.
That's the thing. I'm not saying the kid's going to play. I'm just saying if I turn on the television Saturday and there he is in uniform, it will not surprise me at all. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, Louisville's better. They just are. You know, they're better right now. They're more experienced. They're more balanced. They have they seem more, certain about what they are. The roles
did
are.
Ever, hey, did you ever think you'd be saying that in 2012?
No.
The 2012?
I knew that. Listen, the idea that Rick was somehow falling off was always silly to me, you know, because, like, he's a Hall of Famer and he's never really had bad basketball team. But the idea that Rick would ever have a roster better than Calipari's going forward. You know, that's, you know, I wasn't sure we'd ever get there. But, you know, they lost, you know, whatever they lost, five pros, whatever, in Lexington. They've reloaded, and Ryan Harrow's had a let's just be kind and call it a slow adjustment to being the primary ball handler. Kentucky's good. I think Kentucky will be good. We play this game again in March on a neutral, I might actually pick Kentucky. But right now, you know, in Louisville, I don't know that Kentucky's got, you know, enough about them to go into that place and beat this team.
Well, Gorky's not ruled out. I just got a text from Rick Pitino saying he'll practice today and they'll see how it goes. So, again, we don't know. And even if he comes back, how effective will he be? They certainly need him against Nerlens and Willie Cauley-Stein and some of their length and athleticism. But I just want to see a great game. You know, that's mm-hmm. my take. For this rivalry, which we kind of circled at the beginning of the year as the game to watch this season, and now to have Kentucky where they're, you know, in one poll they're ranked, in the other they're not. They probably shouldn't be right now based on what they've done. You just want to see a great game. And I think we'll see a great atmosphere, especially because, like you guys said, I mean, these Louisville fans are dying to get Kentucky, even if it's for 1 year. And they have a roster that right now they don't go in. And nobody's intimidated right now playing this Kentucky team. It's not like last year that when you took the court against Kentucky, guys were initially right away, it was almost like you were giving them 5 points. Because they just went in, and they had that swagger. And they had Anthony Davis and Kate Gilchrist, and they had that toughness and everything like that. I don't think any team now plays this Kentucky team and is scared of them.
It's, to me, an unpredictable one.
Unpredictable. It's easily predictable. Just predict.
No, I think it's unpredictable how the game will play out. I do. I think it is. I truly do not have a – listen, sometimes you have feelings about certain games. Sometimes you know. I have no grasp on what will happen this game. If Kentucky won by 17 points, I wouldn't be surprised. Honestly, I would not be surprised if they won. If Louisville won by 17 points, I would not be surprised because I think there are too many variables. And I feel like Louisville's due here, but I'm just trying to picture, you know, Louisville actually losing this game and Cardinals fans just losing their minds over it. I don't know. We'll see. It should be a good one. 4 o'clock Saturday. Those are the four big ones. I wanted to touch on all of them as we head into the weekend, and we can wrap up the podcast now. I'll let you fellas go. Gary's got to go find a battery for his kid to ride around. You know,
get a battery for this stuff. Where I don't even know what to do. I think I'm just gonna go lay in bed and cry.